David?
Hey, what's up?
Hey, how you doing? It's Sam from Just Talk With Sam podcast, man. Thanks for giving us a few minutes of your day. We know it's Corona time.
Yeah. Yeah, they got us out here. People acting like they struggling.
Oh, for sure, man. I'm doing a lot of stuff, and I'm doing this. It's a little new. I'm at the house normally, but I had to do things a little different. That's the WhatsApp, man. If you ready to go, we could just start this podcast right now.
Let's do it. How long do you want to talk?
I ain't going to eat up your whole day. 15, 20 minutes?
All right, let's do it.
All right, let's jump into it. You already on. We just going to have to fix a little of this conversation editing. But it is what it is. Hey, David, thank you so much for just for being on the podcast, especially like we were saying. And I want to give you a very special thank you because you helped me out during the whole social distancing, stay home thing. I got a chance to check out your Netflix special.
Oh, dope, man. Thank you, man. I appreciate you watching. It I got to be honest with you. It's worked out for me because everybody is locked up and they can't do shit. So it's like I might as well watch this special. And it has gotten more play and more it's got more play and more following because of it. So I'm glad that I'm able to offer a little comedy during this time when I know everybody's out here tripping.
Yeah, and quite honestly, we did it in this order. We had to do the take turns thing because I'm watching it, right. You know, I had to watch my wife thing, then I had to watch your thing, and I had to watch Nothing Against It, the Madam C.J. Walker movie slash miniseries. It was good. We're not knocking it. It just, but there was like this undercurrent, and she hates when we watch movies together that I picked out. Pretty much,
okay.
That should have been called If You Got a Dick, You're Wrong. That's just what every scene. If there was a dude that just showed up, he's automatically the bad guy. Even the good guy from the last scene.
He automatically ain't shit. He need it. Well, you know what? You know that's the... It's so funny you say that because, like, me and one of my boys was talking, like, that is the climate that we are in right now where men ain't shit. You know, we don't need them, you know? And I think, who did that movie? I think who produced that movie? Was that Ava? No, I'm not sure. I don't think she did that.
I don't know about that. I know... I gotta go back through it. I just know that was the line. That was the through line of the movie where I was watching it and I was just kind of like, all right, this is a cool story. I get it. Oh, here we go. Like every second you can feel it.
Yeah, shit again. Yeah. But that's the complete opposite of what my stand-up special is. So
exactly. And that's what I was getting to. It's a long tale because I watched Fat Ballerina and I was just like, almost like, it was a good special. I stood up and applauded at some jokes where I was just kind of, I don't want to spoil it. I stood up and applauded because it hit so true to life. Because I'm dealing with it with my wife and kid, and I'm just like, sorry, boy. And I just sat out.
How your wife, did your wife watch it with you or she didn't?
Yes, she did. And there was a lot of, that's funny. It was like suppressed laughter because it was just like, It's funny, but I'm making a point about her. So it's just like, we can't be doing that out here. But she enjoyed it as well.
Okay, that's good. You know what, man? This is what's funny. Like, here's the thing. I grew up with, I grew up in a situation where there was times where we had money problems. So I thought that if you took care of money issues... If you didn't have that, then you wouldn't have no problems at your house and in your marriage. And I can tell you right now, that don't mean shit. Like, you can have money and still have problems. There's always going to be some problems. Marriage is not, that shit ain't for the weak. It ain't, you gotta know that, me and my wife in here right now locked up with each other, and we are doing our best to make sure that we make it out of this bitch still married. Because it ain't easy. It ain't easy spending all day, every day with the person that you're in a relationship with. That shit is very hard. So for me, all my stand-up comes from a real place. And some people gonna love it, and some people gonna like it. Now, some people gonna hate it. What's crazy is, most of the time, most of the fan base and the people who I get response from have been all women. Women have that's jumped on and been like, that's us. That is so me. You can't be telling all our secrets, David. But see, I grew up with all women. I'm the only boy. I got three sisters. I got a wife and two daughters. I've only been around women my whole life. So I've seen them up close and personal. So I know that everything I'm saying is true. Whether they like it or not, it don't make no difference. So
no, and I understand that. I can understand that, but it's always, I have to ask, when they say that's so me or that's so how I act, they don't do it openly. Yeah. Do they pull you aside?
Well, no. I mean, like if I'm at the show, when I'm at the show and I do meet and greets after my shows when I'm on tour, husband and wives, couples come up to me all the time, and some women will go, "You got my husband in here cracking up, telling all my secrets," and my husband will go, "That's the husband will be like, that's so her." And then I've had women just flat out say, "Yeah, that's me. You got me down." My husband say, "I'm like this all the time," or even on social media, women will hit me up and just be like, "You got us down to a science." So it's like, I know, here's the thing about stand-up. When you do stuff, I'm not asking nobody's opinion and what they think. I'm telling them what I've seen and what I've experienced. Some people gonna love it and some people not. But the great part about it is, the response to it has been fantastic. It's been incredible, and I love that.
Now, I'm glad you brought that up, because when you talk about social media, like, I follow you on social media, and you are doing things, and you incorporate your family into it now. Well, I won't say now. You kind of been doing that for some time.
Always.
Is it where it's sort of like you kind of got to coach them through it? Sometimes you're the butt of the joke. Sometimes they are. I mean.
Well, no. Like, I got to be honest with you. Like, if anybody who watches, I've been doing stand-up for 24 years. A lot of people have just now getting to meet me, getting introduced to me because of either social media or because of my Netflix special. But if you go back and you look at my stand-up has always been about my family, has always been about relationships, has always been about kids, either my kids or my life as a kid. So, like, that's always been my wheelhouse. So when I started doing social media about 18 months ago, I decided to really use social media as a way to bring awareness to my stand-up and to bring awareness to my brand of comedy. And I had 1,600 followers. Today, I got over 600,000 in less than 18 months. And it's because everything that I do just became real. It just became like my life. I've always been in my life. If you watch my stand-up, it's been in my life. So when I started doing social media, this is my life, and it's organically the next place to go, which is where my wife and kids are. And we have fun together. It's always been fun with us because, you know, we just messing around having fun. So we've gotten better at it. My kids know how to turn it on. They know how to be a little sassy and talk a little trash. My wife is good, and she's gotten better at finding her voice in the space. But it's not, none of it is really scripted unless you see us doing like a scripted sketch that we wrote and did. Most of it is just us in the moment, and that's just how we are. It's a glimpse of inside of our life of what it is. So, and that shit is, when I tell you it's working, it's unbelievable the response that we got about this. I don't know how many people, if you follow me, I'm at the David A. Arnold. You can follow me on Instagram or David A. Arnold on Facebook across the board. But man, it has brought an awareness to my brand of comedy that wasn't there 18 months ago, which I find is dope.
But one of the cool things about your brand of comedy, it has, throughout your career, has mutated a little bit, where it's not just you as a stand-up or you on the producing side or you on social media, but you're a hell of a writer too. I mean, just looking at some of the stuff you were a part of, such as the Tyler Perry stuff, the Ricky Smiley stuff, Real Husband of Hollywood. I love that show. So how does that translate from where you kind of got to pick? Well, did you know you wanted to be a writer? How did you end up becoming a writer?
Never thought about writing ever in my life. The only thing I ever wanted to do was do stand-up. Like, I wanted to be a comedian. When I moved here. Out of Maryland after being in the Navy, and I moved here with literally two trash bags of clothes and two addresses to two comedy clubs. And I just knew I wanted to be a comedian. I didn't know anybody. Nobody gave me no advice. And I just started doing stand-up. And, you know, about 10 years in, I was doing a a show for Tony Rock. And I met a guy named Anthony Hill. We just vibed. Anthony is a writer. And we just vibed. And I was doing punch-up and all this stuff for this TV show. And he's like, man, you should write. And I was like, I do write. I'm writing right now, you know. But he was like, no, I mean like scripts and yada, yada, yada. And I had written some short films back in 2005 for myself. And what I didn't realize is when I wrote those short films that I was teaching myself how to write scripted narrative stuff. And so he ended up getting a job as the head writer for Tyler Perry's House of Pain and Meet the Browns. And he emailed me and asked me, you know, called me and asked me, would I like to come to Atlanta and write this show for him? And I was like, I mean, I don't know. What, how much is it? And when they told me how much, I said, okay, so what you need me to do? and that started. I went down there, ended up being down there for 3 years. I wrote House of Pain and Meet the Browns for Tyler Perry. Then I wrote Ricky Smiley's show for him. Then I ended up writing Real Husbands of Hollywood. And it's just balloon. Kelsey Grammer and Martin Lawrence, I did a TV show for them called Partners on FX. I just got finished two seasons on the Emmy nominated show called Fuller House, which is on Netflix. It's a spinoff of Full House from the 90s show. I have a show on BET Plus right now going into its second season. That's called Bigger. And I'm writing a Nickelodeon show literally right now while me and you are talking. I just stopped writing that script so I can do this with you. So, like, it's just I organically fell into it by accident. And it's just, and now, you know, it's just one of those muscles that I have. So when I'm developing and creating my own stuff, I know how things work behind the cameras as a television producer as well now. So that's kind of dope for me.
Now, one of the cool things about writing, I always love asking writers this question because it's not just about you, especially since you wear the hats of writer's head slash stand-up. How do you write for someone, I guess, quote-unquote, against type? And you got to kind of convince them, hey, this is what you want to say, even though pretty much everything in your career said something different. Like, and I'm using this as an example.
Okay.
From what I know about Robin Thicke before Real Husbands of Hollywood, he was like a, for lack of a better term, like Lothario type of heartthrob R&B guy, but he was kind of the, I don't want to say funny guy, punching bet. He was something against type.
Yeah, he was the butt of the joke. Yeah.
So how do you convince that to happen, or has there been any pushback or anything like that?
Sometimes you get pushback from people when you want to see them do other stuff and they go, oh, I don't want to do that. And you can't make nobody do nothing they don't want to do. But what you will find is most people, what you, the public, know people to be, actors and singers and people, whatever you know them to be, most of the time they want to do something different than what they're known to be. So, like, if he's known as the heartbeat, you want to be funny. You don't mind being the butt of the joke. You got to, because most people have more than one gear to them, you know what I mean? But whatever the gear that catches the audience's attention that makes them famous, that's the gear we're used to seeing in them in. So when you're writing for other people and you're like, oh yeah, I wanna let me tell some jokes, I can be funny, then they wanna do it. Some people got it and some people don't. So, you know, every situation is different. Sometimes you can convince them to do something. Sometimes you can't. Sometimes you give them stuff and you write it and they fuck it up. And you're like, that ain't the way I wrote it. You know what I mean? So it's like, as a stand-up, that's the hardest part for me, is because writing and television is a group effort. You write something, the executives jump on it, the actors jump on it, and maybe by the time it gets to the camera, to the stage, what you wrote is now a combination of 15 other people's ideas. So it's not exactly what you wrote. It's a version of that has everybody else's shit added to it. So like for a comedian, that makes me go, this is why I like doing stand-up, because it's straight from my mouth to your ear. There is nobody else's words or spin or anything else put on it. That's the part that's favorite. That's the part that I like. So now, you know, it every situation is different.
One thing I do understand, and I get that, and I understand that, but where does the, I guess, in your world, the gear shift where it turns into, okay, this is for stand-up, this is for writing, this is for something on the internet, this is for, how do you make those decisions?
I think when you've been doing it long enough, you know what I mean? Like some stuff I can do or like when I started doing Facebook, I started doing Facebook posts in 2008 when Facebook first started. And I was doing this thing called Life with Dave. If you go to my YouTube channel, David A. Arnold, you can go back on my YouTube channel and you can see all of my vlogs, right? I used to have this toilet paper and I would roll it. At the end of it, I would do these little rants about whatever, going to church, mega churches, you know, whatever my rant was. And then at the end, I would go, credits, bitches. And I would roll this little toilet paper with all this credit, with all the credits written on the toilet paper, right? Mm-hmm. This became very popular very quickly in 2008. Then a friend of mine came to me and was like, you know, you could do this stuff on stage too. I had never connected those two things because in my mind, I was like, this is internet stuff. My stand-up is stand-up stuff. And that's the way, you know, I did. But when I realized that, oh, I could take some of this shit to the stage, it started to morph for me. And I started to realize, oh, some of this stuff I can work out on stage, and some of this stuff I can shoot for social media and it'll still play. It depends on what it is. And some stuff I write that's for TV, like if I take ideas, depending on what the show is, depending on what the idea is, I may or may not put it in a show, or I may go, I'm gonna save this for my TV show, my own personal TV show. So I think it's an as case situation. But you get better and better at knowing, yeah, this will work on stage, but this will work in social media, or vice versa. It won't work at all.
Now, one cool thing, I've been doing some digging, and if I'm getting too deep, you can stop me. But no, one thing I do like is that you've taken this out of your career, these constructive elements, and now you get a chance to kind of like put, you know, Pat, we call it passing the ball back, because for the last 11 or so years, you have been teaching this master class, The Art of Stand-Up Comedy, and you have, with it being helping some of the veterans, some of the new guys, so how does it feel being the one receiving advice to now you're the one giving advice to some of the newer folks or people just who need help?
Well, here's the thing. I started teaching, like I told you before, I moved here to Los Angeles and I didn't know anybody. That was 22 years ago. I didn't know anybody. And I spent a lot of time doing stuff that I probably didn't have to do had I known people to give me advice and direction, but I didn't. So I did what I, you know, could. I started teaching stand-up class because I love the art and I love talking about it, and I saw people who just needed some direction and some help. And so I can't teach you how to be funny, but I can give you the tools and the things that I've done that have helped me build a career where I make a fantastic living making people laugh, whether it be writing television, stand up, whatever that is. So that has been the part for me that has fueled it. Now the class, since I started doing it, I do it on and off around my tour schedule and around other things that I'm doing. That class has well over 300 people on its waiting list. It's called The Art of Stand-Up Comedy. If you go to davidaarnold.com, you can get all the information about the class on my website. I teach the class online as well. I work with people all over the world. I'm working with people online in London and Holland. I've done like literally everywhere. And it's because they say those who teach because they cannot do. That has always, I'm not sure if you've ever heard that before.
I have,
but yeah. And I let that stop me for a long time. Because I always like, I would teach a class, you know what I mean? I can't teach you to be funny, but I can teach you all the, you know, but I let that stop me. And then I realized one day that it was my ego. And I said, you know what? I teach because I do and I do well. And that is the reason why my class is so successful, because people are not, they're learning from somebody who is actively performing and making a living doing what I do. And now with my Netflix special dropping 2 weeks ago, it really solidifies me as somebody who is in a position to try to tell you some of the things that you may or may not want to do if you try to pursue this career. So I actually love it. A lot of people think they thought that I would stop when I started making money, but I haven't. I mean, I'm not as available as I used to be. But I do the class every time I have free time. My assistant is dope, and we do the class all the time. We had to stop one right now. I was in the middle of one, but because of this virus shutdown, you know, we paused the class, and we're halfway through one. Celebrities, I have so many people that left that class that have done well. James Davis, who had the TV show on Comedy Central. Zaynab Johnson.
What was that? Hood Adjacent. I remember that.
That's right. James Davis started in my class. King Batch, who's one of the biggest social media stars out here right now. He came. He took my class. Tasha Smith, the actress. Tisha Campbell, the actress. So many people. I have a guy named James Bagley from Will and Grace that's in my class right now. Like, I've worked with so many comedians. A girl named Ambria Allen, who has had several TV shows. She was a writer on The Daily Show and then just got finished writing for the Oscars, also took my class. Like, it's been so many people that have come through that I've had a chance to work with that has been dope. So, you know what, man? That's my way of giving back. And I think that's why now that I'm starting to get a little bit of light because of my Netflix special, that I'm taking it, because I feel like, you know, you give back and things come to you. And that's what I feel like has happened for me.
I mean, going through your career, you've done a ton of writing, yeah, acting, stand-up, yeah, producing. Now, one hat still is, I don't know if you can wear this hat, but we did a little digging. Uh-huh. Is the singing part, because if, correct me if I'm wrong, you are a nephew of the OJ's Eddie LaVert. And does that come up, or I hope I'm not breaking new ground, or if I am.
No, my stepfather actually started the OJ's when I was a kid. I mean, well, long before me, but when I was a kid, I grew up. When him and my mom got married, he had literally just stopped singing. But he created the OJ. So I grew up, my mother was the manager for the OJs, the road manager for them, and Teddy Pendergrass. So I grew up in a musical household, and Eddie and Walt, they're like my uncles. And I grew up with Gerald LaVert, who's like my cousin. Like, it was a tight-knit family. So that was something I was around. I can hold a note, but I by no means am I a singer. I can pretend. I'm good at karaoke.
Yeah.
At karaoke, I'm good, but like to try to make a career, try to feed people off of my voice, nigga, we will all be starving in this bitch if it comes to.
I gotta know, like, when he, all right, and I'm only picking a very specific point in time. This is around whatever that gap between LaVert and LSG. Mm-hmm. Right in there. Did you just like, hey, one more time? Can I? You know, gotta put your.
Can I? Listen, I remember wanting to sing with the group. And I was like, no, you're not. Like, when LaVert started putting together a little group, I was like, I wonder why they ain't asked me to sing. Because you're not good. That's why they didn't ask you to sing. And I realized, no, that ain't. It gave, what it did do was it gave me the knowledge that I knew that I wanted to entertain people. That's what it did do.
Well,
and growing up around them, let me know that.
It worked out, because your lane is a little bit different than theirs, but it's still good.
Exactly, and it's working out, and I can't complain. It's incredible, actually. And I love it, man. I love the fact that I make a great living doing what I love to do. That's the biggest blessing for me, because I see a lot of people going to work every day that hate what they do. They do what they got to do because they got to feed their family or, you know, eat and take care of themselves. So me, I've been blessed to be able to make a living doing what I absolutely love to do.
Well, David, I've eaten up a lot of your time, but I got one last question, mainly because, I am not a stand-up comedian, I guess you could call it comedy, what we do online and the talks and the interviews or whatever. Right. I am broke Trevor Noah. I'm on that. But what I want to do, I know a good number of comedians do listen to my podcast. So what advice would you have those up and coming that's just starting out? What would you want to say, like general advice to them? The floor is yours. Go ahead.
Okay, here's my advice to anybody who wants to pursue anything in the world of storytelling. The biggest thing that you got to know is that you got to be in search of what is your truth. There's always going to be people who don't agree with you. There's always going to be people who don't laugh. There's going to be people who may boo. And then there's going to be people who scream up and down and love exactly what you do. But you have to be in search of your voice What is your truth? Because as a comedian, the only thing that I'm looking for is what my truth is, and I give that through to you through a comedic filter. When you first start doing stand-up, you spend a lot of time going, oh my God, I hope they think I'm funny. And when you approach comedy from that perspective, the audience, has all the power because you're hoping they think you're funny. When you get to a place where you realize that the stories that you're sharing are your stories and they're funny no matter what, it don't matter what the audience think. Because it ain't about them. It's about me and my stories. I'm going to tell them to you. You're going to love them because I'm funny. And if you don't love them and you don't think I'm funny, then guess what? I don't give a fuck about that either. So when you get to that place, that's when you start growing as a comedian. When you get to a place where whatever you think and whatever you say, you're not afraid to share it, that's when you start growing as a stand-up comedian. And as a, I don't care if you're doing a podcast, I don't care if you're doing a radio show, whatever you're doing, it needs to be fueled by a point of view and your perspective, because that's what people tune into and that's what people want to hear. So when you do that, you're going to be all right. And that's the thing for me as a stand-up. I do what I think and I know it's funny. And if you love it, great. And if you don't, then shit, go watch somebody else. It ain't going to hurt my feelings, none. I'm cool. I'm going to be all right. Shit working out over here.
But once again, man, I want to thank you. You gave me a little bit over an hour of relief from this corona time and got a chance to chill. One more time, the special is called Fat Ballerina. Thank you for calling into the podcast. Thank you so much, David.
Thank you.
And we
thank
just wish you, bro, you nothing but success. We're going to play a thank couple you, of clips of your comedy. Try not to do Fat Ballerina so much. Maybe the older stuff, because I want people to see this. So.
Yes. It's very funny. You guys go check me out also online at the David A. Arnold on Instagram. You got to put in the and you got to put in the A. If you don't put in David A. Arnold, you put in just David Arnold, you're going to get the white dude that produces soundtracks for the movies on James Bond. That ain't me. You got to put in David A. Arnold and you'll find me across the board. My Pandora station, my YouTube channel, my website, all of it is David A. Arnold. Y'all go check it out and, you know, come follow me and, you know, get ready for this next special, because I'm already 45 minutes into this new hour, so I'm excited.
Oh, I like that, and I will make sure I put your stuff up on our social media as well. And man,
thank you. I
can't wait for the next one, and just much success and much blessings as you go forward. Just thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you, my brother. Y'all be safe out here now.
All right.
Okay, peace.